fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I'm Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you. And I think no matter if in life you are the most hardcore skeptic or wherever you may fall on the continuum of belief or disbelief, at some time most of us confront the spiritual side of life. And we're going to talk with someone today who that happened for at a time of grief and talk about his journey. And we're talking about Phil Webster. He is a writer, actor, and spiritual teacher. After living abroad for 20 years, he returned to the UK and ventured into acting. He's gone on to appear in movies alongside people like Sylvester Stallone, Benedict Cumberbatch, and Elle Fanning, just to name a few. After losing his mother in 2021, he realized that he had been dismissing spiritual calls to action his entire life. And he decided to do something about that. And he went on this spiritual journey. And that's what we're going to talk about today. He has a new book called Letting Glow. Letting Glow. I want to make sure you heard that with the L, Glow, A Guide to Intuition, Spirituality, and Living Consciously. Phil, welcome to the show today.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
So let me ask you this. What was your attitude towards the spiritual side of life prior to the passing of your mother?
So it had been something that I would take an interest in probably in my youth, when I was a teenager, as I think a lot of us did. And then my kind of beliefs changed through my 20s and 30s. I sort of dipped in and out of changing my mind. I became deeply cynical at some point in life and thought, wow, there's nothing, you know, we're just these walking biological lucky accidents, right? And then, yeah, around losing my mum, and actually slightly before that, I'd kind of after a couple of things that had happened here and there, kind of made me open up to these sort of ideas again. And then, yeah, losing my mom was really the catalyst to dive right back into it.
And I mean, you didn't take half measures here. I mean, as I understand, you've trained with indigenous shamans. You've worked with various mediums. You've really delved into this with both feet. I mean, because some people might say, and let me say, my sympathies on the loss of your mom. I lost my mom in 2013, and that is, it just was 10 years, and that's something that is very difficult to deal with because you only have, you know, one mom. Yeah. But I mean, some people may say, hey, maybe I should start paying more attention to this. But you kind of dove in with both feet. Why did you do this so energetically?
So something triggered this the night before my mom passed away. And this is what I talk about right at the start of the book. So I'm not really giving much away. It kicks off with this. So it was at the tail end of the pandemic. And I don't want to dredge all that up again because we've heard enough about that, right, for the last few years. But I hadn't seen my mom for a few months because of various lockdowns and stuff like that. I'm based in London and she was based in another part of the country in a very small village. And, you know, my mom was 76. She had various health problems, like age-related health problems. But I expected her to be around for, you know, a few more years, you know, at the very least. So, you know, nothing was kind of on the horizon as far as I could tell, health-wise. And we would FaceTime every day throughout the whole lockdowns and stuff like that. And I think this day we'd spoke a couple of times already. And we spoke later on in the evening, and once again, we were in the middle of a lockdown. No one should have been there. And, you know, I kind of knew everyone around her. It's a small place where she lives on a place called the Isle of Wight. And she answered the FaceTime call, and there was a man leaning in to the call. And I saw him long enough that I could describe him. He had like thinning gray hair and glasses. Kind of gaunt. He looked probably in his late 60s, something like that. And I was shocked, you know, there shouldn't have been anyone else there. I mean, I was keeping away. And as she kind of picked the phone up, he went out of view. And I was like, okay, well, who's that? And she was like, who's what? And I was like, well, the guy, you know, I just saw a guy there and she had no idea what I was talking about. So we had a conversation for about 45 minutes and all the while I was thinking, okay, who was that? Right. But I could always tell if it was actually someone with her, you know, her whole demeanor would change. She would speak more sure. eloquently. She would, you know, it was kind of frustrating. You couldn't have a straight conversation with her when, if someone was right. there.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, as far, and I kept on, I was like, look, mom, I just saw someone, who was it? And she was kind of like, you're mistaken, you know? So I kind of dismissed it. And then we had a decent conversation. And the next day, obviously, I got the news that she'd passed. And then it kind of, it put a whole different spin on whoever this, you know, this person was. And it just kind of played at the back of my mind for a few months. And from there,
That would play on your mind.
I always say I can't 100% say that there was definitely nobody else there, you know, but knowing my mom, knowing the place, it was a small house. Again, we spoke for nearly an hour afterwards and she didn't acknowledge anyone or anything like that. And I was working on a movie soon after and it kind of kept me busy because obviously grief is awful in those first few months. And somebody just on the movie set suggested I ask for a sign. And I was like, well, I don't know, sure. Like, I don't really know about that, you know? And I did. And then I had signs repeatedly. And it kind of, you know, again, made me think of this, this person that I seen the night before she passed and started looking at it in a different way.
The thing is that, I think when we have these experiences, whether they're signs or something like you, and it almost sounds like a deathbed visitation she had, but she may not have been aware of it, that we try to explain it away. How did you get past that? Because again, I think the default for most of us, I'll put my hand up. I've been doing these podcasts on the supernatural for almost 18 years, like when nobody knew what podcasting was. But I still try to explain stuff away. Why is that? And what have you done to overcome that?
Well, that's the thing. You know, we have like all these instances where we kind of, you know, we have moments where we call it intuition or you know, a gut feeling or you can't quite put your finger on something or you can cut the air with a knife and all that kind of thing. And, you know, we all accept that that's a thing. But when you start talking about that as like a sixth sense or clairvoyance or using words like that, then people start, you know, dismissing these things or looking at you like you're nuts, you know. So I don't know if it's a question of semantics or what it is, but I think we experience these things all the time. But then when something comes in out of the ordinary that just doesn't sit with everyday reality, then it just doesn't seem to register in the memory in the same way as kind of the mundane. That's at least what I've found. And then since exploring and looking into mediumship and things like that and the experiences I've had since then, again, it kind of requires a slight twist of thinking, I think, to just sort of accept that, all right, that's a thing, you know, it doesn't kind of fit in with my everyday life, but it's there and it happens, you know, and you just sort of have to go with it rather than, you know, letting the doubts creep in and the going with the ifs and the buts and all that kind of thing. So
do you find the more you open yourself up to these experiences, the more happen?
Yeah, definitely. And I've had them before, you know, that was kind of the catalyst to make me reevaluate some of these things that had happened before. Every few years, something would happen. And again, I would just sort of dismiss it. And then, yeah, definitely since and exploring mediumship, opening up with meditation, stuff like that. And then really going down this rabbit hole of looking into spiritual experiences and paranormal events, then yeah, they definitely seem to come thick and fast when you get on that path.
Do you find that, there's different categories, right? The people think one might have experiences with past loved ones or spirit guides, or some people call them angels, or maybe some cases, maybe more sinister energies. Where do you find these messages come from for you? Is it all of the above? Is it one more so than the other? What's your experience?
So definitely, I definitely went the mediumship route through reading a couple of books after my mom passed and sort of people suggesting that I should look into this kind of stuff. And something happened previous to my mom passing, maybe 5 or so years before. I didn't know anything about spirit guides or chakras or any of these things that I learned about since. And I remember waking up one morning and just feeling as though I was, the best way to describe it, and it's a very basic way to describe it, was that I felt like I was receiving information from something like way smarter than myself, like outside of myself, almost as though there was a stream of information going into the top of my head. And I was kind of in that limbo state, the sort of theta state of being half awake, half asleep. And something was asking me, do you still want this? And I kind of was like, what the heck's going on? And sort of flipped out and just brought myself around very quickly. And all around me, I could see like a I know this sounds kind of quite out there, a holographic grid, right? And I was like, well, okay, that's interesting. And I just kind of watched it until it dispersed. And then I was, you know, sort of wide awake and I told a couple of friends about it and they were like, well, I don't know, but had you been drinking last night or something like this? Or had you been sleeping weird on your arm, you know, and you could see traces. And it was like, no, it wasn't any of that, you know. And like I say, at the time, I didn't know anything about spirit guides or shamanism or anything like that. And then again, in recent times, the last couple of years since exploring this, these things are, you know, they're quite common. People talk of something called like a shamanic sickness, which is people sort of having a, you know, what could be considered a psychotic break or you know, something like that, which is actually possibly a spiritual awakening. Not to dismiss anything to do with mental illness, but, you know, the more I've learned about these things, the more these stories seem to come up and it's kind of more commonplace than you think. But yeah, just to go back to your original question, yeah, definitely learning about mediumship and opening up to spirit guides. I'm very much at the start of my journey, but yeah, I would say that I've made a pretty strong connection with those.
In your book, you talk about the Ouija board, and it's something that you know, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of in between on them. You know, some people think they're great. Some people think they're great fun or a game, and then other people think they are a doorway to potential spiritual peril and doom. Right. Where do you fall on the question of the Ouija board, and how did it come into play in your own spiritual journey?
So that's an interesting question, because that's something I've been learning a lot more about lately. And I feel that possibly when I wrote that chapter on the Ouija board, I was being slightly unfair to it based on my own experience that I had as a kid. So I would say as an impressionable teenager, when we were just messing around with one of these things just for kicks, that is probably not the best way to go about it, right? But since learning about mediumship and opening up to spirit and stuff like that, Maybe they're not a terrible conduit after all. You know, I've heard of very positive experiences from people more qualified than me that know more about them. But for me, my experience at the time when I was a kid, we definitely got in touch with something. But I think at that age, you're kind of so mistrustful of people and of yourself. You don't really know where you are, right? And I remember like the group of friends that I was dealing with at the time, no one really knew what was going down, you know. We thought something was happening, but something definitely did. And I continued to use it on my own. But I think at that age, maybe you're more susceptible to bring in sort of a more questionable energy, you know, than if you practiced and were going on a spiritual path and sort of opening up as a developing medium. I think then you might have a very different experience with it.
One thing I know you cover, and I want to talk to you about, you know, a lot of times, even among those of us who want to be more spiritual and pursue these kind of things, kind of your rational mind comes into play. Yeah. And you're trying to be all spiritual, but then there's that little voice, there's nothing to this. You're just imagining things, blah, blah, blah. How do you, as I understand it, you say that we can separate our consciousness from our thoughts. Now, what do you mean by that? And how would one do that? And what would be the benefits of it?
So first and foremost, meditation. So meditation was something that I learned some years ago when I trained to be a personal trainer. but from a different aspect of it to what I'm looking at now. So I kind of knew the benefits of it already, but I never used it as a spiritual practice. So I would say that when you're able to start meditating fairly regularly, you begin to be able to take notice of your thoughts. You know, we're constantly being bombarded with thoughts, right? I'm not the first person to talk about this by any means. But, you know, it's just night and day. You're asleep, you're getting bombarded with thoughts. You know, we're going throughout our day, we get distracted. We see somebody in a t-shirt that reminds us of a band that we saw, which takes us down this memory, you know, and it's just constant. It's all over the place, right? So I think the benefits of meditation, when you kind of can tap into what I would call like the backseat driver, which I believe is consciousness, that the kind of can separate and just look at the marching band passing on by without sort of getting distracted and going with it, then I feel that, you know, you're able to recognize the difference between your sort of inner core and just, you know, everything that we've been conditioned with and that we deal with every day. Yeah.
You talked about your own journey with signs, and I think that's something that, again, with a quote, rational mind, but also someone has one foot in the quote, rational world and one foot in the spiritual world. Yeah. When you have maybe a sign that you interpret as from a loved one, but then that little voice comes and says, it's just a coincidence. It's just a
Absolutely.
Coincidence.
Yeah.
From your viewpoint, how do you kind of separate those out and validate a sign that it's really some kind of meaningful communication from the other side or spirit guides or whatever it might be?
Yeah. So I think for me, just watching other mediums work and then the experiences that I've had myself in a development circle and bringing messages through, that those have been undeniable to me. But yeah, as for the signs, I don't believe that, you know, every white feather that you see on the sidewalk is, you know, possibly right. your grandma getting in touch or something like that. It might have just been a passing seagull, depending on where you live, right? But I think that there is an element of having to go with your instinct. And like we said earlier, when you begin to open up to these things and they appear to come more frequently. And I mean, a skeptic, could argue that, you know, when you start looking for signs, then you're going to see them, right? Which is, I guess there's some validity in that. But I think that it becomes more and more apparent. And again, going back to the meditation thing and sort of being aware of your inner self, you know, the quiet voice that's always there throughout all of the negativity and the doubt and the questioning. And kind of when you tap in with that, then I feel that you get these moments of intuition and you know what's there and what's, you know, probably not, if that makes sense.
In your book, you write about the chakra system. Now, some people may hear that and say, oh, well, that's, you know, that's a little too woo-woo. It's a little too out there for me. But explain to people the importance of the chakra system and why it is something that folks should be aware of and, you know, interface with and learn more about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm right at the beginning of my journey again. I've been really diving into this for the last 2 years. So I'm definitely learning. But as for, you know, energy, that energy is absolutely a real thing. You know, again, walking into a room and sort of picking up on a atmosphere from an argument that had happened before or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think when you get in touch with learning about the basic chakras, and we use them to open up when we practice connection with spirit and developing mediumship, the things flow a lot clearer. You know, you bring that energy up, you tap into the energy around you through these chakra points. And definitely, you know, when you open the third eye chakra and definitely with spirit communication through the crown chakra, things absolutely flow so much clearer. And I think we pick these energies up throughout the day and it's definitely beneficial to sit in meditation and open them up and clear them out. But that being said, I would recommend to learn a little bit more about it than just kind of, you know, just do it on the fly.
You talked about the skeptics. I know you addressed that in the book as well.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think skepticism is 100% a bad thing.
Absolutely.
To me, it's more the debunkers, the people who said, Not only is there not anything to this, I will never listen to any argument to the contrary, and regardless of what you bring me in terms of evidence, I'm just going to say, well, that can't be because it isn't. So when I think of a skeptic in I quote derogatory term, it's more towards that person's action of just rejecting everything out of hand. Someone who has a skeptical nature, who may be open to things, but feels that they need more proof or more evidence, that I'm sympathetic to. Talk to us about skeptics, and if we're on a spiritual journey, how should we interact with them? How do you interact with them? What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I just released the book the other day, and so when I had the release party, I had a lot of friends and family that came by, and I know that half of those people probably think I'm nuts, right? You know, I know that it's not really their area that they're interested in. And I would say that, yeah, I've got a skeptical attitude towards some things as well. When I first walked into a spiritualist church, we have a lot of those here. I don't think you have so many in the US. Where mediums practice weekly. And when I first walked into one of those, I was kind of, I don't know about this, you know, I'd set all of my social media things to private. I didn't want anybody knowing what I was going there for. And then the experience that I had there was just amazing, you know, and was life changing and potentially just sent me down this whole journey even deeper, from receiving a message from a medium. But yeah, I mean, all you can talk about is your own experience. And I think that a lot of spiritual experiences are deeply subjective. You know, they're ours, and you know, you they don't seem to stick in the memory as the same way that sort of everyday occurrences do. So it's even kind of hard to just like hang on to those things when we have them ourselves for the first few times. But I believe that when you have them more and more often, then you kind of recognize that, all right, yeah, this is, you know, this is a thing, and it starts becoming more recognizable. But yeah, all you can do is talk about your own experiences, and if it doesn't resonate with someone else, then you know we can't force anyone else's force anyone else, right? I've shared experiences with people that don't believe in this stuff, and I've been like, okay, there you go, right? That's what I'm talking about, and they're like, yeah, sure, something happened, but I don't know, you know. And it's I feel that some people it's like you said, it's almost like a religion in its own sense that people right. really stick rigidly to their beliefs or non-beliefs.
On the other hand, I've had the experience, because I do a show called, probably my most popular show called Campfire, where people call in and talk about their own supernatural experiences.
Yep, I love that show.
And thank you. And the one thing that I've noticed is, and even in my day-to-day life talking to people about these things, you'll run into somebody that says, I don't believe in any of this stuff, and here's what happened to me. In other words, I don't believe in it. I don't believe in any of this, but this weird thing happened to me. I just saw that recently with an actor who is famous. His name is Jay Thomas, and he was in American actor who passed recently, and he said something like, well, I don't believe in ghosts, but I saw two of them. Right. And then I think he went on to tell his story. My point is that even among people who consider themselves skeptics, grudgingly, in, you know, when you're sitting, as you'd say in the UK, having a pint, they might just say, hey, I don't believe in it, but here's what happened to me. Is that your experience too?
Yeah, definitely. Funnily enough, I was talking to someone last night that had that, and he was kind of like a hardened sort of a doorman bouncer type, you know, and he kind of, we got chatting and we went quite deep suddenly. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, I've had a couple of things happen here and there, but you know, sorry about my Cockney accent there. but yeah, he seemed reluctant to talk about it, you know, like it didn't sort of fit his own belief system, but he acknowledges that something happened, but, you know, he seems to feel uncomfortable about, you know, relaying it or sharing it. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I've definitely experienced things with people. Even my fiance, she doesn't really believe in. She's been very diplomatic about how she talks about this since I've just read a book about these things. But yeah, she, you know, we went to a demonstration of mediumship by the medium Gordon Smith. I'm sure you probably.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, and you know he's amazing, right? And he's up there with the best of the best. And we went to a demonstration together. I was like, okay, there you go. And she was like, Yeah, all right. I don't know. It was weird. I'm like, it's weird. Of course it's weird. But, you know, come on. He was giving names. He was giving street names. He was giving last names. But, you know, she's still sort of, I don't know. But I think just for some people, it just no matter what, it's just not their
and
way.
And I also think people come to it sometimes in their own time. Maybe in years to come, your fiance, especially exposure theory, will you know, become more sympathetic to it or more interested in it, kind of like you did.
Yeah.
You stock and trade being an actor. Do you find that actors and people in the creative arts are having more open nature to this? Not only from the idea that they're more open to it, but they tend to attract it more just because of their energy?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, I would definitely say that there seems to be a correlation between creativity and spirituality and being more open to these things. I would say that talking about these things on a film set, you generally seems to, yeah, get more more people more interested in it than I don't know, in other walks of life that where I've, you know, worked in different jobs. Yeah.
Well, on our shows, we love stories. So maybe a good way to close it out is maybe share a story. It could be from the book. It could be something that's happened to you separately that's kind of evocative and indicative of your spiritual journey and something that's a high point for you.
I would say, like, let's stick with seeing signs. So this isn't... It was another pivotal one for me after what happened with my mom. But just going back to the suggestion that I asked for a sign when I was working on this movie set, and not to do any name dropping or anything like that, but it's relevant to the story. So I was working on one of the big Marvel movies, you know, the sequel to Doctor Strange. And I just moved into a new apartment and I was shuffling through all these Blu-rays that are obviously obsolete now. But I'd got all of these Marvel movies and I was kind of stacking them into this drawer. And while I was doing that, I was like, all right, okay, let's do this ask for a sign thing. So I was like, okay, mom, if you're around, give me a sign, right? And this was really the first time that I'd sort of acknowledged that this could be a possibility. So anyway, I kind of forgot all about it, went about tidying the flat, and I was putting these Blu-rays away. And the one Blu-ray that was missing was the first Doctor Strange movie, right? Which happened to be the movie that I was working on constantly at the time. I mean, it was my day off on this day. And I was like, well, how strange that out of all of them, that's the one that's missing. And I turned the place upside down. Everything was in the right place. You know, all the Blu-rays were in a box. Later on in the day, I came across this Blu-ray. It was the other side of the room. And it was on a stack of books. And the book underneath it, the author's name was Maureen, which was my mother's name. And the title of the next book underneath that said Alive. So I've got Doctor Strange, Maureen, Alive. And I thought, well, I can take that. I'll take that.
Yeah, yeah. I do believe that they get their point across in many unique and diverse ways. And we've been talking about the new book with Phil Webster. It's called Letting Glow. Get that L in there. Letting Glow, A Guide to Intuition, Spirituality, and Living Consciously. Phil, where can people find the book? And if they want to continue to follow your journey, where could they go as well?
Yeah, thank you. It's available worldwide at all the usual booksellers and of course online. I've just created a website. There's not much there at the moment. It's philwebster.com with two L's in Phil. And then I'm probably most active on Instagram, again, under Phil Webster.
Very good. The book is Letting Glow, A Guide to Intuition, Spirituality, and Living Consciously. And we've been chatting with the author, Phil Webster. Phil, thanks for joining us today and all the best with the book.
Thank you very much. An absolute pleasure to be a guest on your show.
And thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it very much and keep exploring those mysteries. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.